This is quite a moment. I want to thank Roger Ream and Bill Campbell for giving me a few minutes here to pay tribute to Forrest. And to Forrest and Ellen, of course, as John said, for the two are inseparable. I am Steve Kligowitz, Director of Education at the National Constitution Center. I've worked at ISI, at the Bill of Rights Institute, but my greatest claim to professional fame is being a student of Forrest MacDonald. As John said, please forgive me if I lose my composure. I hope not to, but this is a very personal moment for me. I've been looking forward to this moment for 7 years when this book project was conceived. And as I stand here, I'm fully cognizant of what a rare opportunity I have to thank publicly and personally one of my mentors. And not just my mentor, but a man who, along with my father and a beloved Catholic priest friend of mine, is one of the three men I have most admired in my whole life. He's certainly the most brilliant man I have ever known. I also want to thank Ken Cribb, Jeff Nelson, and Jed Donahue of ISI, ISI Books, for making history on proper principles a reality. This tribute is long overdue, and I fear insufficient in light of the great man whom it honors. Let me tell you a little bit about the book and how it came to be. This project began in 2003 with a phone call to me from Bruce Fronin. Where's Bruce? There's Bruce. When I was working for Victoria Hughes at the Bill of Rights Institute. I had recently earned my PhD under Forrest. I thought I was his last student, but James Albritton beat me to that distinction. I'm a second to last student. For some reason known only to Bruce, he picked me as the one who was to take charge of this project. Bruce, in his direct way, said something like, "Steve, you and Lenora Ely ought to edit a book of essays in Forrest's honor. Here are some people who should contribute to the book." He named names. "And ISI should publish it." Well, we decided to get the MacDonald's blessing before we commenced the project. I called down to Coker, and Forrest answered his phone, his rotary phone. Knowing that the MacDonalds don't like a lot of hoopla made about themselves, I nervously pitched the idea to Forrest, who answered, not knowing what to expect as a reaction. Some of you know, Forrest hates talking on the phone, so I'm always a little nervous when I call them. I always hope that Ellen answers. Well, I spoke to Forrest, and his response was, "I'd be tickled." And that was that. Ellen asked simply that the essays, with the exception of the introduction by Lenora Ely and myself, not be about Forrest or his work, but be essays in the field on subjects that are of interest to Forrest. And so they are. Ellen suggested a few other scholars who might contribute to the volume. Lenore and I contacted them, and all eagerly accepted the chance to thank Forrest and Ellen in this way. This is the first time I have served as editor of a book of essays. I was warned by more than one person that my biggest challenge would be to keep our contributing scholars on schedule. We all know that academics aren't timely people. Well, I can honestly say that this turned out to be the easiest part of the job. I don't think any of our contributors ever missed a deadline. In fact, it was they who occasionally pushed Lenore and me. As I mentioned, the book project took 7 years, but the responsibility for the delay was largely mine. Okay, I have a couple of excuses. My wife bore 3 children in that time. We've moved house 6 times. Nevertheless, our contributors' timeliness and the fact that they have not and will not earn a penny from this project speaks to their character and is a testament to the depth of their gratitude, nay, love, for the MacDonalds. Indeed, I have been struck over the years by how many lives have been touched by Forrest and Ellen. I have stumbled across people from time to time, many times for the last decade, who have received the help of the McDonald's in some way. The McDonald's won't tell you about this, so I will. The McDonald's paid for my membership in professional organizations when I was a grad student. They gave money out of their own pocket to fellow grad students who, like me, had no money. So they could do research in archives. The McDonald's fought departmental political correctness on behalf of their students. They lobbied for them, when deserving, to get departmental awards and outside fellowships. They put in recommendations for me and for others, and for participation in outside programs, for membership in professional associations, and indeed for jobs. You know, a common complaint in grad school, one that I often heard from fellow graduate students, was how long it took for one's dissertation director to return reviewed draft chapters of a dissertation. Well, when I was writing my dissertation in Maryland, I would send each chapter to the McDonald's down in Alabama, by U.S. mail, of course, not email. McDonald's don't have a computer, never have turned one on to my knowledge. And I would invariably have a carefully reviewed chapter back in my hands within a week or so. They surely had better things to do than to read my writing. But this alone speaks volumes about how much the McDonald's cared about their students. The role of mentor, teacher, was to them a solemn duty. We saw this in the history department at the University of Alabama every day. By the time I arrived in 1995, Forrest's status was such that he didn't have to teach students if he didn't want to. Isn't that the goal of every academic these days? To avoid teaching? Yet Forrest not only taught a course on the founding and one on the interwar period to undergrads, but he taught a writing course. My God, a writing course. I mean, the bane of university teachers. He taught this to graduate students. And that writing course deservedly became quite famous at the university. So if you expected that I would talk tonight about Forrest's contribution to our understanding of American history, how he affected the historical profession itself, or how we should interpret and make sense of his work, well, you have to read the book. Lenore and I do talk about this in the introduction. I do, however, want to mention one outstanding characteristic of the McDonald's, both in regard to their personal and professional lives, and that is their absolute, utter integrity. In the way they treat people, in the way they treated their sources, if the McDonald's ever told you something, you knew it was true. When they wrote something, you knew it was right. There was no question. You know, they evaluated grad students not on their political point of view, but on how good they were at what they did. And there are people here tonight who can attest to that from all across the political spectrum. If you did good scholarship, the McDonald's would support you. That was their sole criterion. So, let me conclude. I hope you've had a chance tonight to walk through Signer's Hall right here. That remarkable room, which in my opinion is the highlight of the Constitution Center. I enjoy walking through the hall at quiet times here at the center, when the visitors haven't arrived yet for the day, or when they've left. As I stroll among these men gathered in that room, who gathered across the street, during those hot summer months of 1787, I often think how they might still be talking in the next world, continuing amongst themselves the conversations that they had here. I imagine that, as in 1787, they have shut the windows so that interlopers are not privy to their conversations. But I also imagine that one day, a long time from now, another, who is truly a man of their time and intellectual ability, who understands them better perhaps than they understood themselves, will join their conversation. Yes, I imagine that Forrest MacDonald will be the only one deemed worthy of entering this special corner of heaven, this select brotherhood, in whose mighty company he will surely be most welcome. Thank you.